Thank you. May it please the court and counsel, on December 6th of 2012, the Idaho State Police conducted a walled-off traffic stop of my client, Mr. Armani Hoffman, to further law enforcement's general criminal investigation concerning a house located in Pocatello, Idaho at 710 Jefferson. And today I'm here to ask this court to reverse the district court's decision and suppress all evidence that was gained from that stop. This is because Trooper Edgley, who conducted the stop for the Idaho State Police, lacked reasonable suspicion warranting each of the prolongations of that traffic stop. And in addition, and that was the calls for the drug dog as well as the probation check and the drug prior drug conviction check that he had conducted.
Could you just walk me through what the various time frames were, especially at the beginning? I did watch the video several times, but it's a little bit indistinct. And it wasn't clear whether Mr. Edgley was doing, what sort of check he was doing when he got back into his vehicle. Because Rodriguez says it's okay to do a record check. I think we've said that as well. But you can't do a felony check. So what was he doing at that point? So he walks up, he stops them, he walks up, he tells them that he erred in driving over a double line.
And that's uncontested, right? You're not challenging the stop itself?
Judge Christian, you're correct.
Okay. So then
there's no dispute that Trooper Edgley did have reasonable suspicion, independent of what was observed at 710 Jefferson, to pull him over for a minor traffic violation.
Okay. So then back to Judge Ikuda's question. I'm just trying to take it from the top.
Yes.
Could you go back to her question, please?
So, Judge Ikuda, the issue here, are the prolongations that are at issue are upon approaching Mr. Hoffman, Trooper Edgley advises him the basis for the stop, and that he's going to cite and release, or not, he's going to release him.
He says, "I'm not going to cite you," but
exactly.
by that time, he already has the registration. As I saw the video, he already has the registration in his hand, so he sees that the truck is not registered to him, and he sees that the address that he has is not the place he says he's currently living.
That's correct. And after returning to his cruiser, Trooper Edgley then calls in a registration check, but also calls in for a drug dog, which under the Rodriguez and this court's Evans decision, he was not allowed to do absent reasonable suspicion.
So at that point, he knows that Mr. Hoffman was spotted at a house as suspected of drug activity. He knows that the truck he's driving isn't registered to him. He made some answers. Mr. Hoffman made some answers which Mr. Edgley deemed to be evasive, such as when he asked him, "Where are you coming from?" He said, "Well, I live in Idaho Falls." And when he asked him, "Where do you live now?" he couldn't give an address or even an apartment number. And then he also said some things about he seemed nervous and agitated, which I couldn't tell from the video. So is that enough, putting those together? Why aren't those enough to give rise to a reasonable suspicion that would justify looking into other issues?
Well, to appreciate this case, I think we need to take a step back in time. And this case occurred before the Rodriguez and Evans decisions were released. Under the Illinois versus Cabalas case, the court had said that running the drug dog around a car during an otherwise lawful search is permitted. And what happened was there was a line of cases saying that we're not going to look at what was done during the stop, but we're going to look at the aggregate amount of time during the stop took. And so what happened is law enforcement became less focused on reasonable suspicion and more focused on whether they were expeditiously completing the stop. And
I think that's not the rule now, right? Because Justice Ginsburg says
exactly. You
don't get bonus points for working fast.
Exactly. And so under the Rodriguez and the Evans decisions, it rang back. Law enforcement said, no, if you're going to do these tasks that are unrelated to the traffic mission, you need to have reasonable suspicion for those
tasks. So why
didn't
they? At this first juncture, the first prolongation, why was it insufficient?
Well, I think if you look at the let me back up, Your Honor.
Judge Acuda's just explained at that point the officer knew he'd been spotted at the house, right? He had trouble giving a local address, a bit of an evasive answer. Why is this not enough?
Well, you
can
have,
why isn't the credibility of the two detectives involved relevant as well in terms of their experience, and doesn't that inform what they knew at the time that Judge Acuda is talking about?
I don't believe the officer's credibility is at issue or question at all. You can have reasonable suspicion can be based on a set of innocent factors which in and themselves do not give rise to reasonable suspicion.
Forgive me for interrupting, but you only have 4 minutes left. So why is it not why is this not enough, please?
What you have here is a series of innocent factors. You don't have any concrete reasons to give rise.
From a suspected drug house where another officer had even participated in a controlled buy. Why isn't that enough?
Does anyone that goes to the 710 Jefferson house and leaves, do they leave clothed?
That's not what he had, right? We're looking at all of it.
I'm
really just trying to give you a fair chance to respond to the question, but we're looking at all of it. He's come from a drug house. He's at this point, he hasn't yet denied coming from the drug house, but he's not able to give a local address. The registration is to a different name. He seems agitated. Why is it not enough? Is there another case we can look to where comparable facts have been found to be lacking, or what is it in particular?
Well, yes, Your Honor. You can look at both the Eighth Circuit United States versus Beck decision, as well as this circuit's court decision in U.S. versus Thomas, where the court said the sum of zeros, where you have a series of innocent factors with no concrete reasons tying those factors together, does not give rise to reasonable suspicion.
Okay, so that's your thesis. That was what we have here.
We have
a sum of zeros, none of them, nor cumulatively.
We have a series of hunches
that
my client was involved in drugs, but no concrete reasons tying him to specific drug activity at the 710 Jefferson house, other than he was observed going in and out.
Okay. Do you want to go to the next sequence in the timeline?
Yes, Your Honor. And I'd like to move on to the next issue, too, which is the other issue that's at play here is Trooper Edgley, many minutes, I believe it was 18 minutes into the traffic stop, decided that he was going to conduct a Terry frisk of my client. It's our position that at that point, that attenuated time into the stop, he did not have reasonable suspicion, one, to conduct the Terry frisk because it was not necessary for officer safety. He didn't have a reasonable fear that my client was armed and dangerous at that point.
What about the fact that the defendant apparently was observed reaching into his pocket several times?
Well, I believe that was after he was asked to exit the vehicle and submit to the Terry frisk. What happened?
I think there was testimony that at least once in the car, he reached into his pocket, I believe.
I may be unfamiliar with that instance in the record. The second argument is that once the Terry frisk was conducted, the purpose was not necessarily to search for possible weapons, but Trooper Edgley's concern was to determine exactly what every object was in my client's pockets.
Is it your argument that he continued to search after he had satisfied himself there were not weapons?
Exactly. He conducted
the
initial
pat-down. So what is the place in the transcript? Again, I'm looking at the time for you. What's the place in the record where you think that frisk needed to stop, please?
Well, if you look at the record at... I believe it's... that page, excerpts of record page 108, lines 12 through 14. And this is Trooper Edgley's words. He says, if he doesn't know what's in his pockets and I don't know what's in his pockets and I can't clearly say that that's not a weapon, then I'm going to check and find out. That's not the standard under the Minnesota versus Dickerson or this court's IEV decision. The officer, unless the incriminating nature of an object is readily apparent, the officer can't continue to manipulate the pockets to determine what that object is. So once you conduct the initial pat down, if the officer is unable to determine there's an object that might be a weapon, then that's the end of the inquiry. And that's where Trooper Edgley erred.
Okay, we took you over your time, but we'll give you a minute for rebuttal.
Thank you.
We'll hear from the government.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is David Robbins, and I have the privilege of representing the United States in this matter. The first question called upon by this court to be answered is, at the time Trooper Edgley called in the canine check, the records check, was that action supported by reasonable suspicion? The answer to that question is yes. Your Honor, you asked about the time frame. Approximately that first initial contact between Trooper Edgley and the defendant took 3 minutes and 26 seconds.
Well, let me ask you about that initial contact. So very quickly into the contact, Mr. Edgley says, I'm not going to cite you. Now, according to Rodriguez, that's the end of his mission. The only other thing would be to make sure that the car is registered and has insurance, which he does. So it seems like at that point, anything that happens after that point has to be based on reasonable suspicion. And the only thing, I didn't see very much, it seemed very, very thin as to what he had. He was seen at a drug house, and giving him the benefit of the doubt that he saw that the registration was registered to someone else, is that enough for a reasonable suspicion to then detain him after he's already decided, I'm not going to give you a ticket, which is the mission?
Yes, Your Honor. In Rodriguez, it was held by Justice Ginsburg that beyond determining whether to issue a traffic ticket, an officer's mission includes verifying that the car is lawfully registered, the presence of insurance, and other things of that nature.
But this was, there's no allegation it wasn't lawfully registered. It was registered to somebody else,
right? That is correct, Your Honor.
So what's the problem?
The problem with that is if you look to excerpts of record volume number 2, you had expert testimony on pages 61, 62 that drug and narcotics traffickers typically use vehicles not registered to themselves to avoid detection.
Right, but so lots of people drive cars that aren't registered to themselves also. So you've got that point that was registered to someone else, which is consistent, but certainly very minimal. There's testimony that Mr. Hoffman was nervous or belligerent. It certainly doesn't show on the videotape. He says, so why are you, what did I do wrong? Oh, darn, you know, it was certainly there's no signs visible on the videotape. And he didn't know his apartment number or his address. So that those are very, very minor sorts of things. So explain to me why that adds up to a reasonable suspicion that would allow for a sustained detention or stop.
It is the totality of circumstances, Your Honor.
Right. What other circumstances have I missed? The drug house, the registration, and he didn't know his address.
He also was evasive in his responses,
Well,
Your Honor.
So the evasiveness was the police officer said, where are you coming from or where did you come from? He says, well, I come from Idaho Falls. It's hard for me to see why that's evasive. There was no follow-up questions like, no, I meant the drug house that you just came from. There was no follow-up question. So I think that was a reasonable response to where are you coming from? Oh, I live in Idaho Falls.
I would state that the response, the trooper has been a trooper since 2007. And when he asked that question, it struck him as evasive, and I do cite to the transcript of record, page 65 on volume 2, saying that typically in response to that question, he would have expected, I'm coming from a house, a grocery store, to respond ultimately where you're from, he found odd. But Your Honor is correct. That standing alone is not reasonable suspicion. It's the totality of the circumstances. To return back to your original question, Your Honor, you asked what else? There was moderate aggression at the initiation and outset, and that's in volume, that's at 83, but then it was the nerves.
What conduct are you specifically referring to?
In terms of the moderate aggression?
Mm-hmm.
When the officer approached the vehicle, and approximately a minute into it, instead of saying, why did you stop me? you know, is essentially a confrontational cone as opposed to, I'm sorry, sir, what seems to be the problem? I think that is the basis for the officer's conclusion that he was moderately aggressive. His aggression obviously creased way more in the video, but there was also the issue of nerves, Your Honor. Now, nerves alone are not sufficient for reasonable suspicion, and I do not submit that to the court. However, the officer, when he told him, I'm not going to cite you, his nerves did not abate. His nerves maintained, and that he's noticed as being suspicious. So when counsel tries to draw parallels to United States versus Beck out of the Eighth Circuit, this case is a little bit different, especially on the issue of nerves. But in totality of the circumstances, Your Honor, leaving a drug house, not knowing where he lives, minor evasion to the question, nerves you would have expected to abate, and also driving a truck registered to somebody else, the government respectfully submits that that is reasonable suspicion based on specific articulable facts.
Reasonable to do what? What's the next step that he took?
United States versus Sharp. Well, the next step he took, to answer your question directly, Your Honor, is he went back to his vehicle and he called for a canine. He pretty much instantly found out that no canines were available, and this is why dispatch was running in the background.
This takes another minute and a half, 2 minutes?
In terms of
Go ahead.
The record is unclear, because it seems that multiple searches were going on at the same time.
Right.
So you have dispatch looking up records, and then he's making phone calls simultaneously.
So he was also checking, getting not a record check on the vehicle to see if there were outstanding warrants, but checking for felony conviction. So does this nervousness, evasion, whatever it is, give rise to a reasonable articulable suspicion that the driver is a felon or has a felony conviction?
Not necessarily that he's a felon, but the officer is working diligently to either confirm or dispel his reasonable suspicion, which he's empowered to do. And a person's criminal record may be of marginal relevance, but of course, if somebody's been convicted of drug trafficking 10 times in the past or have a clean record, either confirms or dispel that reasonable suspicion, which may inform the officer's next actions of whether or not to prolong the stop or to actually seek out a drug dog and the like, Your Honor.
So basically, anyone who sees a person leave a suspected drug house who then has a minor traffic infraction can be stopped and held while you search for felony convictions. I mean, that's what it sounds like you're saying.
I do not submit that as a hard and fast rule, Your Honor. I apologize if that's the impression I'm
getting. So what's the key factor then, that the car wasn't registered in his name? Because you can see whenever you pull somebody over, they say, like, why did you stop me? And then he looks nervous, and that's enough to run a felony check. That seems very thin to me. So is it because of the registration that's enough to tip it over to the other side?
I would say all the factors in tandem, Your Honor. I think the weightiest factor for the government was the drug house. The drug house was very substantial.
So then anyone who stops at a drug house can be pulled over and harassed.
I wouldn't say harassed, Your Honor, perhaps investigated. What I would say is that Jefferson House, in the manner too, let us not forget that the defendant stopped there for a mere 10 minutes, came in and out. It wasn't on Thanksgiving Day, and he stayed for 3 hours. But the manner in which he stopped at the time of night is also suspicious. But somebody who's evasive with law enforcement, exhibiting great nervousness, doesn't know his own address, and was driving a vehicle, each isolated by themselves, Your Honor, does not equal reasonable suspicion. I agree with the court, but it's taking everything together in this unique fact pattern. Reasonable suspicion doesn't lend itself to nice and neat and clean rules. And so I'm sorry to resist you asking me if that's enough. On these facts, I say yes. On other facts, perhaps not, Your Honor. I'd need to know more about the hypothetical in which we are engaging. I notice my time is dwindling, so I'd like to turn to the next issue, if I may, which is the continuation. The trooper acted to try to confirm or dispel his reasonable suspicion by running the warrants, the probation, and the canine. He discovers three important pieces of information for the 8 minutes he's in the car. So to give you a time frame, 3 minutes and 26 with the initial step, 8 minutes out, so we're 12 minutes into the traffic stop that he reapproaches the vehicle and speaks to the passenger.
They don't find anything on Hoffman, so then he runs as chief and says, oh goody, he's, you know, on probation. And now I know he's hanging out with a convicted felon, so I don't, probably it's a violation of his probation, so now I have a reason to stop his Jeep. Isn't that what happened?
Well, we're talking about the subjective intentions of the officers when we say, oh, golly, good. What I'm trying to get the court to focus on is they did find things on Mr. Hoffman. He does have a 2008.
Caution code, right?
Yes, and a hostility code for violence against law enforcement officers.
Is a hostility code different than a caution code? I thought it was a caution code. Is it the same thing?
It is very confused in the records, Your Honor, okay. And it's referenced at page 101 and page 88, but they kind of have some variations on terms that were
used. But it's one code. He got one, not two.
Speaking outside the record, my understanding for Idaho State Police was it was a caution code for violence, which I believe is just one, but that's outside the
record. We don't really have that. So
yes, and it is kind of muddy in the record, but there was an alert for some form of hostility. So he gets that from Mr. Hoffman. Now he's confronted with two things he needs to do that's reasonably related to his law enforcement, a potential probation violation in addition to the narcotics investigation. And he has to answer both. And now he does, and he addresses both investigations with reasonable diligence. He gets Mr. Ashif out of the car, and after speaking with him for 2 minutes, he learns that he's on probation. He also learns at 14 minutes and 14 seconds into the traffic stop that he should not be associating with felons. And that
14 minutes is a long time, counsel.
It is, Your Honor. However, it's not necessarily the time frames. Supreme Court, as Rodriguez says, we do not base these things on time frames or expectations. That was the primary holding of Rodriguez.
I understand. I'm just telling you, 14 minutes is a long time.
Yes.
And it is sort of one thing after another in this case. It's quite a extended sequence.
Yes, to justify the police officer's actions, I would reference United States versus Sharp, in which we analyze whether or not the officer acted reasonably to confirm or dispel his suspicions. And in this case, operating alone, he pulled Mr.
The officer says, "I won't arrest you," he says to Mr. Ashif. Could he have arrested him for a suspected probation violation?
At that time, Your Honor, and I'm speaking outside the record, and I notice my time is over, if I may respond to your question. It is the policy and procedure that they call probation and parole to verify the terms of probation, to report, and then they could either say, go ahead and arrest him on an issued warrant or things of that nature. So, I mean, there has to be some additional communication. So, off the record, my response to your question would be, I think he has to have more communication with the on-call probation officer.
Okay.
I see that my time has expired. Do your honors have any additional questions for me?
No.
Apparently not. Thank you.
Your honors, it is a privilege. I ask that you affirm the district court. Thank you for hearing. I respectfully submit.
Now I want to focus back on the prolongations. And the court in its decision, I want to focus on when those occurred. Those occurred, as the court noted earlier, 5 minutes into the stop. Mm-hmm. And they both followed the call for the drug dog was made right after the call for the driver's records check. And then right afterwards, Trooper Edgley embarked on the calls for the drug convictions and the probation checks. There's no new facts that occurred between those two prolongations. Now, in the district court's decision, it focused on some factors which occurred much later in the sequence. And as the government articulates in its brief, there's really five factors that it relies upon to give rise to reasonable suspicion. And these all occurred at the outset of the traffic stop when Trooper Edgley makes initial contact with Mr. Hoffman and his passenger. The court cannot use anything, or the government cannot point to any of the factors that occurred much later in that traffic stop to somehow bootstrap and give rise to this reasonable suspicion, because those prolongations occurred so early into this traffic stop.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. We appreciate your argument. And the case of United States v. Hoffman is submitted, and the next case, United States v. Christian Ruiz, is submitted on the briefs, and the United States versus Peters is submitted on the briefs, and United States v. John Emmett Brown is submitted on the briefs, and we'll next hear argument in Stephen Crow and Cheryl Crow versus Trans Systems, Inc.